Blog Talk Radio.
He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast smooth. She is the lady with her hands.
Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama. Together you got smooth drama.
All right, welcome to Smooth Drama with your host, Dick Hugger, a.k.a. F the N-Word, and I'm joined with my stunning, I know I said stunning last time. And
yeah, you said that the last two times.
Unique and effervescent co-host, Ms. 100%. And tonight we have Scott Rose, creator of the Adventures of Super7Spy.com, and stuntman and writer and author and actor. I don't think there's nothing that this man hasn't done. Anyway, if you want to holler at us, the number is 646-929-2037. Once again, the number is 646-929-2037. And that's to talk to us and to talk to Mr. Scott Rhodes. Amazing guy, y'all. Y'all gonna love him when he comes on. In the meantime, me and Miss 100%, we of course want to hear from you on a personal level, on a more sociable level. We're on Facebook, Twitter, tagged my yearbook, you name it, we're there. And of course, Miss 100% would like to tell you where you can catch up to her.
Right. And before I do that, just 2 seconds. Now, we have some very, very smart listeners. They have always had good things to say. I really miss hearing voices. I want you guys to call in. I want y'all to probe our brains and ask us some stuff, you know, get to know, you know, Dick Hugger and Miss 100%, you know, because we're more than just talk show hosts, you know, we're your friends. So let's get to know one another. Anyway, you can catch me on Facebook, Miss 100% Smith spelled out, and you can email me at imnotonbs@yahoo.com.
Yes. And also, if you want to catch Miss 100%, you go to our Smooth Drama page and go to the About Us page where the bio info on Miss 100%, you can go and get excited. You see the picture of Miss 100%. And also, you can see my picture also. You know, my face made for radio. And if you wanna add me on Facebook, my yearbook tagged, I'm Dick Hugger. On Twitter, you can follow me. I'm Smooth Drama there. Follow me, add me. I'll add you back, follow you back. And that goes for Miss 100% too. You know, we, like she said, we trying to be friends with y'all.
Right, we all in this together, y'all. Let's do this.
Yeah, we trying to come over for dinner, all that.
No, wait now. Wait.
All right, my bad. I'm getting way too friendly here. Now, I was going to start somewhere, but I want to start in Boston. I think this is a little bit more appropriate since we talking about getting to know people. We're in Boston. The TSA is being trained because they're expanding their behavior detection program. Where I guess what they do, they'll talk to passengers and try to spot potentially high-risk travelers by looking for suspicious behavior and facial expressions of tension, fear, or stress.
Sorry.
I read this, and I'm wondering, What? I mean, if you pull me over at the airport, the tension in my face is, are these fools going to make me miss my flight first? Second, you're like, what did I do? You're obviously upset because they pulled you out. After I'd already stripped, I took my belt, my shoes, you know. I mean, I didn't and took my clothes off already. I mean, what else?
I would guess that anybody could be put into the category as quote unquote high risk, especially if I'm pissed off. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, high risk. What do they mean as far as high risk?
Well, supposedly they are going to try to have what they call an extended conversation.
And make us miss our flight. Is that what they talk about?
Yeah, well, they have a behavior detection officer. I think there's a word for that, Miss 100%. You want to say what that is?
Behavior detection?
Yeah.
Oh, that's racial profiling.
All right.
That's what they mean.
I figured you would say it. I mean, profiling. I don't understand the whole what you call behavior detection. I think anybody.
I'll be the dictionary for you.
Yeah, I mean anybody would be upset if you pulled me over. I don't know anybody who wouldn't be upset after waiting in the long line and stripping and putting all your clothes on, and now they won't have a conversation. I went through the thing and nothing went off. You checked my luggage. I had no weapons of mass destruction. Please.
They done dug up all in your butt and everything else. They because you know, like they said, they were going to start. You know, the people in Florida. That what was it? Rectal searches are legal now.
Right.
So that can be part of it too.
Yeah.
So they can just take you out of line, take your clothes off of you, right there in front of everybody. Then have the behavior detection officers come up and have an extended conversation with you. Then take you into a room and do a rectal search. Okay. And then say, oh, okay, all bad. You can get on the plane now.
Well, I'm just stuck with the extended conversation. Like, anyone would be happy to be pulled over. I know for sure I don't want to be in Boston now flying anywhere.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's past.
So basically, they're really saying that all people from a particular race, okay, racial. They act or behave the same way.
Well, technically, they haven't said that. They said they'll be looking for suspicious behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we'll be on the lookout for that. speaking of suspicious behavior, for the nerds out there, nerd listeners like me, Ultimate Spider-Man in the Ultimate Universe, not to be confused with the Marvel Universe. They killed Peter Parker. He died. You know, it was a big event because Spider-Man is dead, technically, in the Ultimate Universe.
Okay.
Well, they brought him back. I mean, there was a major announcement at the comic book convention, San Diego Comic Con, saying, hey, there's going to be a new character. A lot of people thought that it was going to be the Spider-Man clone, Ben Reilly, and it ends up, and I know I'm going over your head, Miss 100%.
I'm listening, though. I'm trying to learn some things. Go ahead.
Well, supposedly, the new Spider-Man is a half-black, half-Hispanic named Miles Morales, and as he's gonna have the Spider-Man costume, Spider-Man powers, he's gonna have some different powers, whatnot, and that'll be it. They're going for diversity to diversify, which on the surface sounds cool, except I I'm never a fan of diversifying on an established character's ship. I always thought that, hey, if you wanted to do something, you create a real character and you do the story. I mean, because at the end of the day, you do a great story, people will read. But unfortunately, the cop-out is we're going to make Spider-Man not just black. We ain't going to make him Hispanic also. So it's like we're going to roll the dice and we're going to get 2 for 1.
Okay.
Yeah. I read it and I was like, wow. And
what are they hoping to accomplish by making him black and Hispanic?
To get a so-called broader audience. You know, I mean, because they're saying black folks and other minorities aren't reading the comics as much as they should. So with a black and Hispanic character, a black and Hispanic Spider-Man, they can broaden the audience. But I hate to tell them, but I know you went and seen the Spider-Man movies, right?
I've seen them, yes.
Yeah, and I've seen them, and I've read many Spider-Man books. It's the story. It's not the character per se. If you do a good story, it doesn't matter. I mean, last time
I was going to say, as a child, or you know, as a young person, I was always interested in Spider-Man.
Right.
I don't really know anybody that wasn't interested in Spider-Man. So, and it didn't matter to me that Spider-Man was white or
right.
Caucasian, or however you want to put it. So,
right.
I don't see how that'll make a difference.
Well, and that's we try to point this out because it's like Blade. I think more than black people went and saw Blade because it was a great movie and the story was good, as opposed to the comic, which was probably one of the worst characters. If anybody, and I keep saying anybody ever saw Blade as a comic book character, was one of the worst things ever put together.
Okay.
And on that note, we gonna go on our first break before we bring on Mr. Rhodes here to go into the break, find our place in the universe. This is Illcentral, to know your place in the universe.
Universe.
to Smooth Drama. That was Essential. To know your place in the universe. I think I know my place in the universe.
Hmm. That's a whole nother show. You know that, don't you?
I know, but now we're going to get Mr. Rose on, and we're going to talk about Hi, universe. How you doing, Mr. Rose? Welcome
to Food Drunk. Doing okay.
How you doing, sir?
I'm fine.
Hi, Mr. Rhodes. This is Ms. 100%.
Yeah, I mean, I want to say, first, reading your bio and everything about you, what haven't you done, man? I mean, you're all over a musician, Golden Gloves winner,
yeah,
actor, stunt man.
Yeah, I'm looking at all this stuff like he's a real life superhero. Like, what? Yeah. Like, how do you find time to do everything? It's like, I'm not kidding. I'm literally saying everything. You've touched on everything, it seems like.
Well, I tried. And once you hit 49, though, you find that you had a lot of time to do everything.
Okay.
True. Now, I was going to ask you, you know, if you had to pick one, of all the things you've done in your career, which one? Stuntman, actor, fighter, writer, fight coordinator, musician. Which one would you pick?
Director.
Director?
Yeah.
All right.
Why director?
Well, because you get to put your vision on the screen and run the show.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Well, speaking of running the show, and after watching your adventures of Super7Spy.com, which is a great show. How did you come up with that concept?
Well, I mean, I've always been a really, really big movie fan ever since I was a kid. And one of the genres that I always liked was the spy genre. And especially the stuff from the 60s, and not only the good stuff like Bond, but the really bad, cheesy stuff. And they used to run those movies on the 4:30 movie back east, the late show, and I always used to love that type of movie. And I came up with the idea of Super 7, which is a subgenre of, like, the spy movies, these masked heroes running around doing spy stuff, and usually they're wrestlers by day and spies by night, go figure. And I came up with my own guy, Super 7, who's an international man of mystery and fits into that kind of like cheesy spy-fi genre of spy flicks.
Well,
you know, so people who like Matt Helm and Armand Flint and stuff like that would appreciate this type of movie and hero.
Well, I have to disagree with you. I mean, you say it's cheesy. I think it's something that should make its way back. I mean, you know, we have movies now in series for the most part where it's just gore and senseless violence just for the sake of it, and the sense of humor has been lost, and that was one of the things that endeared me to your series.
Well, you know what it is too. A lot of days, and I agree with you. I'm a big fan of everything that has come before, and you know, there's a lot of movies that are made by committee now. And they cost so much money that nobody wants to take a chance and do something goofy or silly or that has, like, you know, like a premise. You know, like a lot of the grindhouse movies in the 70s and 80s that were done for a few $100,000. They won't do those movies now and put them in the theater. You know, they may do some low-budget stuff and pop it right on DVD or Cinemax. But even then, they try to play it safe.
Well, I mean, and playing it safe is the simplest stuff. And I think what you do, the originality is what comes through. Because, I mean, you had me when the guy threw his ball, when Super 7 threw his balls at him and they were hot.
But it had the crew, too.
Yeah, well, not only that, but the also the other part that there was in one of the earlier scenes that when you were fighting against Super 7 is fighting against the spy and Sandra West. She's watching and yawning and doing everything, and then you do a reversal a few episodes later where you're doing the exact same thing. Well, Super 7 is doing the same thing. I was like, that's what I'm talking about, the originality, and you tied it all together.
Well, here's what gets me, and again, I don't want to sound like I'm putting anybody down, but I've seen a lot of web series for my own enjoyment and doing research, and I give props to anybody who picks up a camera and goes out and shoots. It's a great thing. But
yeah.
I've seen a lot of web series where they do nothing but talk for 3 to 5 minutes, and it's excruciating. And nothing happens.
Yeah.
Or everything you would expect to have happen happens. You know, like you're listening to people's drug problems, or, you know, people talking in an office for 4 minutes, and you're like, okay, what's bringing me back for the next episode?
Right.
So when I attempted this, I just wanted to do things out of the blue, like stuff you would not expect to see in a web series or expect to see, period.
Well, I know you're fight coordinator. I mean, your fight scenes are fantastic, actually.
Thank you.
They're well done, and I think that's what you're talking about, because I know I've watched a few web series. I tend to be drawn more toward the web series myself because of the originality factor, but like you said, there's a lot of just talking.
Yeah. I mean, some of them are like the longest 3 minutes of my life.
3 minutes we can't get back ever.
I mean, if you can't get somebody with 3 minutes, I mean, a trailer is designed to get somebody in the theater with 3 minutes. And
right.
If you can't do it in 3 minutes, I don't think it can get done.
Yes. So, and I'm reading, as a young man, you were into the martial arts, and I know you say that you were influenced by Bruce Lee. You were a boxer. I mean, was it something you just liked, the combat aspect, or?
It was a bunch of things. Number one, I was a little runt of a kid, and I used to get picked on and beat up, and they always used to say, you know, good prevails, but then I said, well, I'm good, how come I'm keep getting beat up? So, you know,
all right.
Yeah, it was a practical matter. But, you know, I used to live in the 42nd Street theaters, and I used to see all the Bruce Lee movies over there, and he was this guy who was about 145 pounds soaking wet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he can do amazing things. And, you know, of course, that influenced me to get into martial arts so I can kind of protect myself in that urban setting of Hoboken, New Jersey.
Yeah.
And it went from there. I went different martial arts like boxing, amateur wrestling, judo. And ultimately, at one point in my life, I studied with Jerry Poteet, who was one of Bruce Lee's original students. So it was kind of an example of the circle, you know, coming around. To be able to do that was phenomenal.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I thought about that very circle when one of the things it showed you played both Alien and Predator in Batman Dead End. That was the first movies that I downloaded when everybody was in the download movie.
Right.
And I remember that was so phenomenal. I'm like, wow, it's great. And to see that you did that, and I still have it somewhere, and I have you on my show. It's like, it's just funny. That's that whole circle that you're talking about. I love that.
Well, it's still out there. I mean, just on YouTube alone, it has over 3 million hits. I mean, it's one of the most downloaded short films in internet history, which is one of the reasons that inspired me to do this, because I remember what an impact Batman Dead End had 6-7 years ago. It got the director a contract. It got him a great agent. He's done commercials. He did a feature. And it just showed the power of the internet. We debuted it at Comic-Con. And within 2 days, it went viral on the net. It was everywhere. As a matter of fact, like, we showed it, and the next day, dealers were selling bootleg copies in the dealer's room.
Well, if you go bootleg, you know you did that. That's
yeah, all. The next day, it was there for sale for like $10 or $15. They just, you know, it was amazing to see. And, you know, a lot of people in town wanted to see it. Directors like Spielberg, everybody wanted to see that movie. And Warner Brothers, this is the story that filtered down to me, is that they took a beating with the last Batman movie before the Christopher Nolan films.
Yeah.
And they didn't know what to do. So they wanted to go back and do like an Adam West-style campy Batman, like comedy.
Mm.
And after Batman Dead End premiered and went viral, the fan base went nuts for like that dark, dramatic Batman, and Warner Brothers changed its direction based on the impact that Batman Dead End had. So if it wasn't for Batman Dead End, there probably would be no Christopher Nolan Dark Knight Batmans.
Well, those Batmans before were so terrible. With the last two or three were so bad. I mean, I thought they were already doing the Adam West versions anyway.
Well, they were going to go even further than that. they were going all the way.
Now, talking about your career as a stuntman, where you Buffy the Vampire Slayer, I mean, you were Alien and Predator. How did you get that job? And what was your most satisfying moment as a stuntman?
Well, let's see. Long story short, everybody comes into the stunt business from their own area of expertise. Some guys are pilots, some guys were rodeo, and then they come in and, you know, use their skills and then learn stuff along the way. Mine came from martial arts. And I was a filmmaker in college, and I made a lot of action movies in college. And one day the administration decided to kick me out because I threw somebody through a skylight, set one guy on fire, and they don't like that in college. So they decided to let me go, and I went professional.
I can understand that a little bit.
Yeah. I read about that. I thought that was awesome when I read that. Like, you threw a guy through a window with a classroom full of people. That was,
yeah,
I would have loved to see that. To see that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good education.
Well, hold on. We have to preface it because it may have been funny to everybody except for that guy.
That guy.
Well, you know what was really funny is the one stunt that got me booted was I threw somebody through a skylight. But the one before that was we were doing a fight scene in a hall, and I flipped a guy into the door, and he actually went through the door, which he wasn't supposed to do, into the middle of a classroom that was in progress. And I heard screams come from the other end, but the professor, who I had known and knew me, just looked up at me, and without a beat, just continue talking to the class. It was like, oh, this
it's like, oh, it's just him again. He's just doing his
job.
But the satisfying part of that was a few years later, maybe 93, 94, one of my professors asked me to come back and do a scene where I had a throw a stuntman off a three-story building, which was the media arts department. So I was brought back to do a job that originally got me kicked out of college.
Irony.
Yeah. Irony can be pretty ironic at times.
Yeah. Now, as a director, what as far as your vision when you plot something out, what are you looking for in general? When you do a scene?
Well, let's see. It kind of goes back to what entertains me as an audience. You know, I kind of have a very simple theory on my movie viewing habits, you know, to entertain me. I either have to see something that's really, really good or really, really bad. And if it's in the middle, I'm not interested. So when I direct, I'm kind of the same way. I want to do something that's either really good or really, like, you know, like cheesy and Z-movie schlock, kind of like making fun of that. So that's kind of where I sit on things.
Well, I was thinking really, really bad, like this movie I saw this week, Cowboys and Aliens.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was really, really bad.
Didn't see it yet. It's on the list, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, when I'm talking about bad, I'm talking about those, like, you know, 42nd Street double features, you know, like from the 70s. You know, like something like, you know, if you said, you know, you can direct Cowboys and Aliens, I'd be like, nah. I would rather direct Lawrence of Arabia, Star Wars, or Blackula.
Blackula,
like,
yeah.
So that would be my, that would be my style.
I read that you were also on the soap operas. Now, some of the actors and actresses on soap operas and some of the shows, I mean, are they cool or are they as snotty as they are made out to be?
Well, I'll tell you what, honestly, you know, because I started working on soaps like in the mid '80s, and I did that in New York, New Jersey for about 12 years. The ones who I really got along with and I liked were the veteran actors, the actors who had either been on the soaps a long time or like movie stars and TV stars who wound up being on soap operas for a while. The young up and coming kids, you know. They tended to have a little bit of an attitude. Mm. You know, they thought they were going to be stars, they were going to be on TV forever, and they didn't realize that if it wasn't for that gig, it was back to delivering for Domino's Pizza. But I used to get along because, you know, I've always been a movie fan and a little starstruck, so whenever I'd be working on a soap, either as an actor or a stunt coordinator, and somebody came on the show that I was watching on TV as a little kid, I would immediately, you know, gravitate towards that person. Like David Hedison, you know, I'm coordinating David Hedison from Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea and James Bond, and he introduces himself, says, "Hi, I'm David." I'm like, "I know." I know who you are. I've watched Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea and James Bond, but, you know, there's that fine line between being a fan and a professional, so
right.
Very difficult.
Yes. Oh, I know. I'm fanning out on you now. Now, I was going to say that I know we talked, and you had an injury while you were performing stunts. Wanted to ask, I mean, your motivation to keep going. Where do you get that?
Well, here's the deal. You know, I worked as, you know, I was a martial artist since 9, and I worked as a stuntman most of my life, over 20 years. Somewhere along the line, I injured a vein in the back of my head and didn't know it.
Mm.
And if you injure a vein, one of three things are going to happen. Nothing, which is the best. It'll pop, which is a hemorrhage, and it'll kill you. Or the vein will close up. And in my case, I was asleep one night, and it just decided to close, which caused a stroke, an injury-related stroke.
Mm.
Went to the hospital the next day, did 30 days of rehab in Downey. Came out, you know, I've been rehabbing for the last 3 years. When it first happened, you know, I didn't have any, like, memory loss or, you know, what you would associate with a lot of strokes. But it did totally paralyze my left arm and leg. Couldn't move it, couldn't use it. 3 years later, through rehab and exercise and everything else, I've gotten about 50% of it back.
Okay.
But I'm still time to time in a wheelchair and a motorized scooter. And, you know, things, you know, get better progressively. But, you know, it's kind of like watching grass grow very slowly. But from there, I kind of realized that, yeah, you know, pretty much my stunt career is over. I could go to the ground really good, but I have trouble getting up.
Mm.
But I still had that passion for writing and directing, and I wanted to challenge myself and see if I could still do it from a wheelchair and scooter, which prompted me to get a camera and people I know in the industry together and do the first Super 7. That was kind of a test and also rehab at the same time.
Yeah, I know that. I brought that up because I thought it was so inspiring. It's one of them stories where you hear it, and it's like for people who make excuses why they can't do something, you know,
right.
Say that, hey, you know, you can be a successful anything you want to be despite
mm-hmm.
setbacks that may happen in life. I mean, because setbacks happen to everyone.
sure.
Yeah, you know, I love people like you. There's a difference between someone who chooses passion over career, because
mm-hmm.
career says I'm going to do it because I know that I'm going to get paid, I'm going to get some type of compensation, but passion says I don't care if I go to the grave broke. This is my passion. This is what I love to do. Nothing in this life, nothing in heaven or hell, is going to stop me from working towards my passion in life. And that's what I love about people from you. Very inspiring.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, the one sad thing, I mean, there's a lot of sad things in life, but one sad thing to me is somebody who doesn't have a passion for anything or never realizes their passion, you know, because life
yeah.
gets in the way. And, you know,
yeah.
it could be even something similar, something simple like painting or drawing comics. It doesn't have to be, like, lofty, like making movies. You know, everybody should have some passion in their life that they can escape to and, you know, keep their sanity. And filmmaking, you know, was one of mine. And I put it off for a while, to be honest, because I just didn't know if I could do it. I mean, making a movie is not only very arduous, but there's a lot involved, getting a crew together, getting lighting. And I just didn't know if I could do it anymore. And I tested myself with I did a short film called 60-Second Film School, You Too Can Be a Fight Choreographer. And I shot it with a basic Canon point-and-shoot snapshot camera that also shot high-definition footage. So I shot an entire movie with a snapshot camera, a minimal cast and crew, minimal lighting, threw it together on my computer, edited it, and threw it up on the internet, and it got good results and a lot of views, and a lot of people thought it was funny, and that showed me that I could do it, and because of that, then I got into the whole Super 7 series.
Well, I know I thoroughly enjoy your Super 7 series, and I did the whole dead spy removal service.
That's a short unto itself. I don't know if you've ever seen that. Before I did Super 7, I did a short.
Yeah.
Called Dead Spy Removal Service, and it was
yeah.
like a commercial.
Yes, I saw it.
So, yeah, it's kind of a running gag, you know, and it'll be back again, you know. So at some point you will see the Dead Spy Removal Service come into a room and take dead spies out.
Well, I know that it was saying you working on another project, Assault on Werewolf Beach.
Well, that's a feature-length script that I wrote, and that's the concept. I mean, it's one of the simple pitch ideas that I could ever go. I'd love to just go into a producer's office, and they say, what's the concept? All I just do is sit there and say, werewolves, Navy SEALs, swimsuit models, South Pacific Island. I don't need to say anything else. That's it. just fill in the blanks on what happens from there.
Yeah, I saw it, and I was like, I watched the trailer. I was like, I would watch this movie.
Well, see, that's what I did. Before I shot the first original Super 7, what I did was I wanted to cut something because I didn't know if I could shoot. So I got a bunch of clips from old spy movies from the 60s and threw them together in these mock trailers for Super 7. And I think there's like maybe four or five of them that are floating around on my site.
Yeah.
And then I also did the same thing with Werewolf Beach, because nowadays if you go in to pitch a movie idea to anybody, you can't just go in with a script anymore. And unless George Clooney is your first cousin and agreed to do it, you have to go in with the dog and pony show. You got to go in with posters and trailers and concept things. I mean, the more toys you go into, the better equipped you are to sell your project. So I cut together a mock trailer for Assault on Werewolf Beach, using scenes from movies that had Navy SEALs and werewolves and swimsuit models.
Yeah, I was like, I would watch this, and I would hope to see the swimsuit models running and falling and, you know, doing what swimsuit models do, tearing their uniform. But that's just me.
Well, I promise that'll all be in the movie if and when I get it off the ground, for real.
All right, I'm holding you to that. That'll be my number one critique. It's like, man, you sold out on the swimsuit models falling in the pot in the mud and the uniform tear? That's
no, they have to fall.
Yes, they have to fall.
Wow.
Hey, it's just that's just part of the lore. If the women don't fall and tear something, then it's not a real like horror action film.
Well, especially like in an exploitative market, you know, there are certain things that, you know, they want in a script. That's one of them.
Wow.
Hey.
That's all I can say about you guys is
but,
wow.
No, it's not wow.
I mean, really, has anybody ever seen a monster movie, whether it was 10 years ago or 50, where a woman is being chased by the monster and doesn't
that
fall?
That she didn't fall? Yes. True.
It never happened.
I mean, they would have to fall for the mummy so the mummy could catch up to her.
Right.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just saying, and the clothes tearing is just, that's just is added realism.
But yeah,
oh my goodness.
You know, down the road, I want to, if I can get some notoriety with Super 7 and get a series or something off the ground, Werewolf Beach is definitely in the queue. That's on the docket.
So what can we look forward to in Super 7 coming up for the?
Well, let's see. I plan on doing at least 10 webisodes. And after that, what I'm going to do with the webisodes is try to put them out on a DVD with a making of and all the bells and whistles, photo gallery, and release that. After Labor Day, I'm doing a push to try to get it to like an interested studio or producer to try to do it as a series. And I also have a feature-length script. So anything we can do, including that, would be great.
Okay.
And just wanted to say too that all the people that you've seen working in these series, they're all professionals that I've worked with over the years and friends. And as much as I can do a lot of this stuff, I could not do it without these people. I mean, they're all perfect. Like Jerry Kokich as Super 7 and Olivia Dunkley as Sandra West and Michelle Jubilee Gonzalez doing those amazing gymnastics.
Yes.
We've gotten some incredible feedback, and the girls are a really big hit and integral.
Well, their fight scenes are very authentic. I mean, they're not like your typical,
Yeah, that was on purpose. I wanted the two women to fight like men. I wanted it to be like I choreographed that fight for two men and just let two women do it. And I just wanted to show that they could, and both ladies were amazing.
All right. Well, I want to thank you and for coming on and tell the people where they can find Scott Rhodes in this amazing web series.
Well, there's a couple of methods. You can either Google Super 7 Operation Triple Cross, and that'll take you to a bunch of videos. My website is SuperSevenSpy.com, SuperSevenSpy.com, or you can go right to YouTube, and my channel is Bob Griffith 2001. That's BobGriffith 2001, and my channel with all the videos will pop up.
All right. Well, I can tell you, anybody who wants to watch something to be entertained, you would definitely check out this man's stuff. I'm all about all Scott Rhodes. I say you're a role model, inspiration, and a great entertainer, sir.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
And I look forward to this this Werewolf Beach, man. I'm
we'll debut it at Comic-Con. You'll know when it's coming when you see the poster.
I'll be there. I mean, but hey, when you're ready to debut anything, feel free to hit me up and come on and we can talk about it.
I'll do that.
All right. Well,
thank you again, Mr. Rhodes.
Both of you have a great evening. Thanks.
You have a great evening too, sir.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. That was Scott Rhodes, Renaissance man. If there's something to be done, hell, he's probably already done it.
He done it.
You can't stop him. You can only hope to contain him.
Yeah.
And on that note, we gonna go on a break here. This is Wombat Roo by Kenny J. Guys, Brady Canfield by Kimmy J. I'm a sucker for comic book stuff. I don't know what to say. What I'm not a sucker for is you know, we talk about the internet and how people are stuck on the internet. Reading something about South Korea and how they have a clinic which treats web addicts. And, you know, they're giving folks avenues to get off, like they're addicted to the web, like it's crack. Once again, you know, we love it. I mean, I'm an online radio talk show host, but at the same time, I can't see where I'm gonna be on the internet, and I'm like, I can't get off. I'm connected to my computer. I mean, it's like the gamer Chris Standiford, 20 years old, playing his computer console games for like 12 hours a day. He died from deep vein thrombosis. It has a nickname, DVT. You know, and it, I guess he sat there for so long that he started getting clots in his legs, and the clots traveled from his legs to his lungs. And you know, I don't understand. Is it that serious? You know, people can't. I mean, and I get the gang part, in the feeling part of a community with the gangs, whatnot. But when you can't venture outside and talk to real people,
there's
some serious issues there.
I remember when I first, you know, learned about the web and, you know, started learning about computers and everything. I was just so hooked, and I would stay on the computer for what seemed to be forever. But then I thought, I have a real life to get to, and I have to go to work. You know, I have to go to school. I have a kid. All of these things, and I'm just wondering, like, it ought to be a bell that goes off in a person's head that says, this is not reality. And it's like people are just getting lost. You know, they lose sight of what's reality and what's fantasy, and they'd rather be stuck in a fantasy world, it seems, you know.
Well,
and
speaking of that whole fantasy world, there's the video by a rapper, out of the Bay Area, V Nasty, where she, you know, she uses the N word. I mean, and y'all know how I feel about the N word. My whole name is about F the N word. I've never been a proponent of it, and I'm not a proponent of black people using the word. It's a derogatory word. No matter how you want to try to make it a term of endearment, I don't find it endearing, and I don't see how we can find it endearing. And so V Nasty is using the term, and you know, she's a white rapper, and so a lot of people are upset, and she comes out with a video and talking about, well, I don't know why y'all were, I'm in the streets and I'm coming out with my album. I mean, so for me, it's like she's doing it for publicity.
Yes, that's what it seems like to me. She made mention of, y'all ain't from my hood, y'all can't walk in my shoes. And here's my thing with all of that. I can appreciate maybe she grew up in a predominantly African-American community, and, you know, that's probably what she saw growing up, and so she's, a product of it. But if she should do the same thing. She can't walk in a male in an African-American or black person's shoes and understand what it or how it feels to be called a nigger, whatever you want to, however you want to put it. She can't understand or even fathom how it feels to have that, you know, be called that, or have, you know, somebody to look at you as if you are just nothing but a nigger. So how I don't understand how she's trying to justify using that word, because she comes from, you know, a black community or whatever. And so that's like, okay, now you're saying that the only thing that they do in black communities is things that are derogatory and call each other nigga and all of that.
Well,
so she's just a stereotype.
Yeah, well, I mean, that would be the issue, because she's following suit behind where she is, and that's why I preface it to start by saying I don't believe anyone should say it. It should be a word that dies. And as I've stated before, if I can go back in my time machine, comic book style, with the person who invented the word, I would take him out on the spot.
Right.
This word is not going to exist. Period.
Mm-hmm. But
we're going to talk about reality.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we talked about Kyle in English, young man out of Ohio who was who allegedly was thrown out, well, threw himself off over a bridge in Ohio. But there's allegations that it was police brutality. There's a young man, Kelly Thomas, 37-year-old homeless man with schizophrenia, who the police in Fullerton beat him and tasered him repeatedly till he died. I mean, he slipped into a coma, and he never recovered. And this is a 135-pound man who died 5 days later. And we talk about the police brutality. But where is the law, the mechanism, where when the police do such atrocities, we can call them to task, and they really punish, not vacation. I mean, it seems like when the police do these things, like in the Kylan English or in your Kelly Thomas's case, it's just, well, it happened. We're sorry. The officer is put on disciplinary leave, and then it just goes away.
The bad thing about this is that, if I read the story correctly, that they beat him while people watched.
Yeah.
And then act as if they did nothing wrong. They murdered somebody. For what?
Well, I mean, and that's the issue. I mean, every one of these cases, someone was murdered with witnesses. Well, they were beat unmercifully with witnesses there. And, you know, I guess it doesn't really matter whether they're witnesses or not, because nothing happens. Nothing changes.
Yeah.
It's the exact same thing every time. And, I mean, we're talking about Kylan English is Ohio, Kelly Thomas is California. I can guess that we can scour the news and can find a case like this in every state, every city.
Yeah.
And
probably in the hundreds.
Well, we'll say
untold stories.
Right. I mean, because we talk about stories that aren't told.
Right. People who have actually lived or been able, were lucky enough to walk away from it, but was too scared to even come up, you know, to come forward and say anything about the abuse that they suffered at the hands of the police,
right,
or peace officers.
Well, that's the thing. We need something good to happen from this, but it seems like it never happens. And on that note, I want to thank Mr. Scott Rose for coming on. I want to thank Miss 100%, my effervescent and astonishing co-host. You know, I want to thank the listeners and my bloggers for being in the blog chat room and whatnot. I'm Dick Hugger, a.k.a. F the N-word, for Miss 100%. Smooth Drama. We out.
He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast. Smooth. She is the lady with her hands.
Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama.
Together you got
smooth. Drama.
Smooth.